Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So how different is it from the old Mario games? Well, take a look. There's really no comparison. They've even made the music, well, honestly, less annoying.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasselot, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanel here. You know why they call us Filthy Casuals?
Because we didn't Google how many podcasts already had that name before we decided to call ours that.
Correct.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Adam Knox is my name. I'm on that show too.
Yeah, I've had to... It's look, occasionally it comes up. You have to tell someone what you do for a living.
Yep.
And then they go, what's the podcast called?
Yeah.
And then I go, Filthy Casuals, because we're filthy and we casually have a casual approach to games.
We've done it yet again this week as well.
Yeah.
I've as the most filthy but the least casual here, I've played some stuff. I've seen some news.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like the show is going to be us talking about that.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of
sorry to be so brutally honest.
I've played a little bit of some stuff and I showered on the way in here. So,
did you?
Yeah.
On the way in?
Yeah, on the way in.
Got one of those shower trams.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got like, I travel around in...
a dog wash van.
Yeah, like a converted version of the Pope-mobile, but I've just put like a shower head in the top of it.
Right, a little camp shower, a little fill it up with water. Psh.
Yep. I don't want anyone to be able to assassinate my rubber ducky that I carry on me at all times.
Those Mr. Bean commutes where you're brushing your teeth, putting your clothes on.
Yeah,
guy was an irresponsible
driver.
Driving
the car with the broomstick.
Get his license taken away. I'm amazed that he was able to get it.
Why is he so time poor? He doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that's true. What's his job?
Although, well, we found out in the Bean movie that he works at the art gallery.
Yeah, he's
right.
Oh yeah, that's he was the security guard at the art gallery.
Was he the security guard?
I think
guard?
So.
Or like the janitor? I don't know
he's
why
doing
I went
something.
To that.
I think he's security. I think he falls asleep and someone steals something or
the
something like that.
Because he's at like a big British gallery.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
and they send him over to LA on some kind of transfer program.
To get
which
rid
is
of Bean.
How he ends up, fucking up Whistler's mother.
They went to a bunch of galleries.
Is that him who did that? Oh.
They have those people who are just sort of sitting in a chair in the corner.
I think
him. They're not guards. They're just there to make and like you can ask them questions and stuff.
Yep.
Sure.
Like, you know.
What's that one a painting of?
Yeah, what does this mean?
Yeah. Can I take photos?
Yeah. Would you rather fight a horse-sized duck or
where do you get your ideas from?
Speaking of taking photos, if you're in Melbourne, please come to my special taping. Next Thursday, November the 30th, in Melbourne, 6:30 p.m. at Stupid Old Studios in Brunswick. Tickets at TommyDasselot.com. Be there.
Remember.
Photography not allowed.
One person in the room.
They better.
The director of the special.
Yeah.
Everyone else forbidden.
Right. No still images for Instagram stories.
Maybe a couple of them at the end. Yeah. Maybe I'll just film it like Beastie Boys style and give everyone in the crowd a camera.
Where can people go if they want to get tickets for that?
TommyDasselot.com.
TommyDasselot.com/to hell.
It's a special little section of my website.
For the little monsters, the little demons.
Scary little gifts of flames licking up the bottom of the screen.
I make and update your website, Tommy.
Yep.
Can I convert it to like a GeoCities style?
Yeah, maybe.
Some little skull gifts.
Yeah, let's do that after I've got these dates wrapped up.
No, before.
Yeah, before. Yeah.
Now's the time to start experimenting.
Yeah, I got a free afternoon today.
I feel like people are more likely to buy tickets if it's pitched to them by a little dog running back and forth endlessly across the bottom of the screen.
Speaking of scary little images, if you were playing video games back in 1998, you might have had a scary little image or two pop up while you were playing the game Half-Life.
Oh, yeah.
Which had its 25th anniversary the other day.
Happy birthday.
November 19th.
Mm. Finally, its brain has matured into being an adult.
Yeah.
According to modern science.
Which I think science needs to catch up maybe.
Yeah.
I was
12.
Nine.
11.
They did like a little celebration, a 25th anniversary, bunch of stuff. They made the game free and they released like a pretty crazy update for it.
That's so funny. 25 years on being like, all right, I think we've finally squeezed every bit of money we can out of this. Time to make it free.
Valve has like put all of their games in that bundle on sale for like $3 and shit plenty of times before too. Like a lot of people with Steam would already have it, but yeah, the update included like some old like cut content from it, and they like redid the menus to be more like the original PC version, because when it was like put on Steam, they like Steamified it all.
Okay.
But this one has all like the old sound effects and shit. It's got the weird little grainy intro of the guy with the valve in his eye. I went back and had a little look at it.
Yeah, I bet you did. Oh man, I bet you spent an hour just on that old menu alone.
I kept moving the little cursor up and down here, and they're like bleep, bleep, all the sound effects. Yeah. And they also released like an hour in that as well, like the Half-Life Up Blink demo, which hasn't been available since then, which is like a separate part that isn't in the game.
Right.
That was like a really cool, like crazy demo at the time.
Did they do the commentary for the original Half-Life, or was it? Because I know that they Valve did it for did that two. As well, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they ever put it in for one, but they did make an hour-long documentary,
right,
about like the making of Half-Life, where they got a ton of the people who were involved in it and reminisced about making that thing.
Mm.
And it's pretty good. It's made by Danny O'Dwyer, who does that Noclip thing. And yeah, it was interesting. I learned some stuff about the game. Gordon Freeman, a scientist, for example.
Does he talk in the taco? They get a little talking head interview with him.
With him just sitting there being like, burk, 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 burk. Like the people's mouths would move and still do when they push buttons in that game.
Because
they've got to like attach the sound to someone. And it's weird that they never changed that.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a cool documentary. If you like Half-Life or video game documentaries in general, I think it was a fun one to watch. Like one person did all of the audio for that game. The sound and those sound effects are like some of the most recognizable and most well done in video games, especially from around that time. And like he created all the like cool echo effects that would like dynamically play depending on the environment that you were in and stuff like that.
That's so, I love, like I was telling you guys before, I'm reading a book about the making of Doom and Quake, the guys who made that. And it is fascinating, like the games of that era. It's like every department is just basically one dude. One guy designs the levels, another guy does the art, another guy does the music,
and
another guy does the programming.
This one woman did most of the textures, and they've got like a bunch of the reference photos
that
were used to make it. And like, yeah, a lot of those textures are just photos of fucking shipping containers that were around.
Right, hell yeah.
It's really cool, all that shit. And yeah, they were all just like 20-whatever-year-olds who, the top people like Gabe Newell and shit were working at Microsoft and went, actually, fuck this.
Mm.
Went and started a video game company. And yeah, it's hard to understand now, I think, how like transformative that game was for first person shooters at the time, even to the point where it's roughly around the time when they stopped being called Doom clones because of the innovations that like that and Unreal and stuff were making that made people go, oh, this is broader than just
it's telling a story. Environmental storytelling was something that basically was invented. I was gonna say, like, each department was one person who was inventing new ways of making games.
Yeah
And a lot of them are like, how can we trick the hardware into doing what we want it to do?
Totally.
Because we just, it just can't do it, render stuff that we want it to do. So we'll find a way to like have it be loading in the background or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you get a bunch of people who work unhealthy hours on this thing.
By choice.
For a long time.
I think.
it's cool. If you like Half-Life, have a little wiggle of it again.
Obviously, there's been a little bit more like, you know, scuttlebutt about next a sequel, another one like that.
It
happens whenever anything has an anniversary and it has a re-release, but
yeah,
like
it's funny how many things there are where people think like, well, obviously if you were going to do anything with this, the anniversary would be the perfect time to announce it. And it's funny how many things get announced like the year after, like the 25th anniversary or whatever, because it doesn't quite line up. But
especially with that one, it's kind of funny watching everyone, like, it kind of goes through chronologically, which, it, you know, makes sense.
It's a good way to do it.
It's one of the most famous ways to structure anything.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
When you listen to this podcast, you're listening to it chronologically in the order that we recorded it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, wait, that's not 100% true.
Well, let's do a flash forward. I hate it, but I can't stop playing it. And we're back in the room.
We got to do this every week now. A little flash forward sizzle.
Coming up. Yeah,
we invented the tease.
There's a point in the thing where they're like, yeah, we've just been sort of making everything we could think of, and everyone was working on whatever they wanted to, which is a famous thing about Valve, that they have like this flat structure where there's not really a management structure so much as people just work on what they want to work on. Mm-hmm. And then there's a point where they're like, and then we realized we had to put the game out, so we did it normal. Like, people were telling each other what to do because we needed some direction and we needed to cut stuff. And I wonder if, I don't know how many of them even actually still work there. I think a number of them do, but like revisiting the idea that like, oh yeah, maybe if we do a more traditional structure.
Workflow, yeah.
I think that same thing happened with Alex, where at some point they started working on it more traditionally and they put a fucking game out.
Right.
I would love to see them do another Half-Life game. I know that there's been over the years the talk about them going like, well, we want it to be something that was really new and different or whatever, and that's why they did the VR thing, because it kind of was that. But fuck it, man. Yeah. Do a normal. Put out a vanilla fucking game. I don't care.
Yeah.
Give me more.
You see what
Britney
happens.
Spears about it, dude. Hit me, baby, one more time.
You see what happens if you just continue with that, like, you know, what was it? Who made Disco Elysium? ZAUM, where they had an anarcho-communist structure and they imploded after one game.
Yeah.
And they're all suing each other. Like, it's, yeah.
It's good for probably like the beginnings of creativity.
Right,
like,
exactly.
That was like the big headline of when Mario Wonder was about to come out. They started working on it and they didn't have any kind of vague release date or timeline. It was like, just start throwing stuff around and see what sticks and take as long as you want. But at a certain time you have to go, okay, now it's coming out on November the 6th.
Different people have different structures and different preferences of working and all that sort of stuff, different structures that they respond to and all of that. But ultimately, and the thing is about cutting at some point. You can't just keep making and making and making. You've got to stop making.
Yes.
And that's the hardest bit to do, especially for creative people. Like, there was a thing, a former Nintendo employee, and this like got picked up as a news story, which is weird because the tone of the tweets were just like, this was my experience working here, and it was more about them than about Nintendo. But they said something along the lines of like, that it's a fantastic place to work if you're a genius, and hell if you're not.
Yeah.
Because
interesting.
I think just the level that they're all functioning on and the expectations are high.
Yeah.
Which
you're fucking banging your head on the door frame and shit. Like, oh.
That's probably not.
not
the top of the top.
That's also
Mr. Bean sitting in the corner being like, I think his job is just to wait for questions. We're not really sure.
Yeah. It's kind of true of any creative industry, really. Like, you know, it's to see people who are doing the thing that you do at like this incredibly high level and are so good at it. It's frustrating in relation to your own work because you're just like, God damn it, I wish I was that good.
And some of that is management sometimes. Like, there are more bad managers in my experience than good, and it's a certain type of skill that lots of people get to perform that skill who don't have that skill.
Yeah.
Right. And don't come under the same scrutiny, in my opinion, as people who are doing other jobs do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can get away with it as a bad manager, but if you've got a really good one, Brian Epstein. He was great at managing that island. No, the Beatles. that type of person in the mix elevates if they're good at it.
That's the problem, though, is because, I mean, band managers aside, in a corporate structure, if you're really good, you get promoted to executive. And so that's why managers are often people who aren't good enough.
You're
to
living
be
in a dream world.
Can you imagine if that story was flipped, though, if they were like, it's actually a great place to work if you're mediocre and terrible, which there are places like that have these, like, you hear that this is where these, like, kind of disputes that you read about down the line in these, like, creative companies come from, where there's someone who is, like, such an idiosyncratic thinker who has these, like, great ideas, and they just don't get given the platform to, you know, like, Nintendo seem like they're very good at being, like, this is the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the guy who's, like, tapped into how to, like, innovate and make something very creative and fun. So, like, yeah, let's just let him cook.
Right.
Yeah, hard to say, obviously, because we've never been inside it.
I have.
What?
Yeah.
In the main bit?
Yeah.
You snuck in?
I wonder if they... I wonder
He's
if
not
they,
going to explain.
I wonder if they got a request from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Hey, I just want a tour of the offices in there at Kyoto.
Hell yeah.
Famously secretive company, whether they'd be like, we don't care that this kid's dying, get fucked.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I
he
don't
He doesn't
wonder
get
that.
The Nintendo gold seal, sorry.
I'm just always thinking about, famously, my wish from the Make-A-Wish Foundation was to get a laptop that was obsolete within about 30 minutes of receiving it. And yeah. So it's just always on my mind when I think about the undoable and like, I wonder if with a time machine, if that could have been my wish, if that would have been able to be made to come true.
Fuck.
Did they give you any pushback on that? Did they go like, you sure? Do you want something else?
they were fine about it because okay. All they're having yeah. to do is go down to, you know, Harvey Norman.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck?
My parents were like,
yeah.
We could go on a holiday. Like, yeah. I mean, if I don't have a laptop to take with me, then what's the point?
Mum, Dad, you don't realise the transportive nature of a laptop.
Exactly.
I can go anywhere.
I'm speaking of going to Japan and Nintendo, I reckon I'm going to go have a little poke around Super Nintendo Land in a couple of months.
I reckon I am too.
Ooh, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, cherry blossom season, I'll be there. I think we have some listeners in Japan from memory.
Yeah, we have two. No, wait, we have three that I know of.
Excellent.
All right.
Did they have a kid, the two?
We get very granular statistics on that.
But yeah, that'll be really fun. And I intended to go there in March of 2020.
Intended to go there.
That's not bad.
It's not good.
That kind of joke has universal appeal.
It's one of those ones. Not bad, not good, right in the middle, just like an employee who'd hate it at Nintendo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
That'll be exciting. I'll report back.
Film it.
Yeah. If I'm allowed.
Film yourself all day. Okay. That place looks crazy from the footage I've seen of like how much it looks like people are walking into a cartoon.
They've really hit it out of the park.
Roger Rabbit shit.
Yeah,
they've
it's
hit
awesome.
It into the park.
Well, I guess. Didn't they have to extend? I think they had to extend out the park, right? Or did they just delete?
Did they delete a certain world
that was in there?
Yeah.
They might have overtaken a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would
be mad if J.K. Rowling keeps on this trajectory. Maybe they can just bulldoze all of the Harry Potter bit that's next door and really
I just imagine
stretch out the Nintendo bit.
I mean, the 35-year-old white women like chaining themselves to the front of Potterland, whatever it's called. But yeah, that'll be fun.
Maybe they'll replace it with a Knights of the Old Republic. I know that doesn't make any sense.
Land.
But yeah. the remake of Knights of the Old Republic is pretty officially underwater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No work is being done on it at this time.
It's all business
bullshit
language for like, that A was never working. B was clearly never going to come out. Right. I feel like at the time, I don't know if I'm on record as saying that I didn't think it would ever come out, but that was the thought I had.
I think so, yeah.
I hope there's no record of me saying exactly the opposite. People get... I'm excited to play that by the end of 2023.
Yeah, no one's going to find that and clip it out if you did say that, so don't worry about it.
Imagine doing that to yourself.
it's gone.
It's done. It's a shame. Like, it's a fantastic game that... Look, it did have HD re-releases and stuff.
Which also had issues, or like the one of Knights of the Old Republic 2 and the Switch, there was all that stuff earlier in the year about them. They'd always promised to patch in the fixes and never did.
Yeah, that's crazy. It really was like almost a non-functioning game without that extra content that was like modded in by just players back in the day. But it's done. I guess we at least have, the Jedi Survivor franchise to cling on to. Oh, and like and Outcast, is that what it's called? Outlaws? Outcast?
There's that one that...
Outcast was a thing.
That David Cage and shit are making apparently still
too.
Oh,
yeah.
So there's plenty of Star Wars action-adventure stuff.
You can find Star Wars stuff if
you're
that's your jam.
You're not hurting if you're a Star Wars fan at the moment.
But Adam, I want a Star Wars property that actually is just a remake of an old one.
Look, if you're looking for remakes of the old one, video games are not the realm that you're going to be able to enjoy yourself in.
Shit.
Until the 19th of January next year when The Last of Us Part 2 remastered.
Which I would argue doesn't even fall under the banner of remake of an old one.
No way.
Remake of is still quite new and current one.
Re-release of a current game. Yeah.
This is a weird one because like... I think they're doing it the right way where if you own the old one, you get it for $10 and it's got new content and stuff.
And That's basically you're paying $10 for a survival mode. Yeah, survival mode.
That's
and
right.
Some cut
a texture
levels.
Pack.
Yeah.
And I think like other making of-ish sort of stuff.
Some director's commentary of like some unfinished levels and things like that. Some kind of interesting sounding things, and then like sort of a little bit cleaned up to for you know the PS5's more powerful. But
that aspect of it is insane to me. Just being like, hey, there's a bunch of extra stuff we're going to chuck in for $10. That's great.
Yeah.
Frame it that way. I don't need... It's just odd that they're, remastering a game from a couple of years ago.
It's the same as those Uncharted ones they did as well. They put out the like the 4 and the... What was it called? Lost Legacy ones for the same way. And there's a million different parts of the spectrum of where people have done remakes and remasters and stuff. And... they're all over the place with how well they're done, how much they're worth. So the concept is not a singular thing.
Yeah.
And this one's somewhere in the middle where it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Oh, like, it's not egregious, but it's just like...
It seems kind of unnecessary, but also... Because I think I said this at the time when they were doing the part one remake, remake.
Yeah,
that it felt like they were just doing that to kind of bring that a bit more in line with how 2 looked.
Totally.
And then I think I was joking at the time, like, oh, well, now if they remake 2, then they're just going to be constantly like leapfrogging, and now we have to remake 1 again so that it looks like the remake of 2. Like,
and with 1, they wanted to put out the PC version as well, which then was kind of fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And then they haven't mentioned a PC version of this yet, but you'd think at some point.
They'll release one that's not very good.
But someone else do it maybe. But like...
right.
Using the word remaster is even maybe just like something that seems to have gotten people's hackles up.
Mm. Yeah.
The hackles up. Is
absolutely,
that what gets up?
Yeah, that's the hairs on the back of your neck.
Again, I mean, I don't really care about this stuff even when it is egregious.
Is that what your hackles are?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it's what a dog has.
Oh, okay.
It's like they're specific hairs that are like they put up when they're angry or scared.
Right. Yeah. When I get scared of a remaster, I got that dog in me.
Yeah, I mean, I generally am like you said, it's so all over the place with what these things cost and what they do to them. Like you've got the money to engage with it. And you think it's worthwhile or you don't.
You either want it or you don't, 100%. This is not like a fear of missing out thing. No one's getting like manipulated into spending extra money. This is like, hey, if you want this stuff, it's $10.
If you never got around to it in the first place, that's probably a big part of why this exists too.
Sure.
Like,
it's a game of the year edition.
Yeah, totally. Honestly. Yeah, like, people have bought a 5 since the, in the last little while, since the show coming out.
They've
finished the... remake of 1 at the start of the year. If you think about it in terms of the timing of that, it's like, a year later you get to play the second one remastered if you never got around to it.
Sure.
I think the fact that there are so many different points on that spectrum with like that Red Dead one where people are like, nah, fuck this. Like I agree that was too far in the direction of like you're charging too much for not enough work being done to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then of course there are people who are just happy about like the availability aspect of it. So yeah, it's all over the place.
Mm. I think with Naughty Dog's been good about it with all of their ones, I think.
The part one remake thing being like the full price thing was like a little pushing it.
Because again, when we talk about the spectrum, it's sometimes even within the same company there's no consistency.
Yeah.
And this is like a great example of that where...
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the $10 upgrade thing to me is... That makes sense.
Yeah.
It also
doesn't like... Like how can everyone get paid for working on it by just... Like if... You know, like it seems like it's a loss leader or something. Like it's so cheap.
Yeah, maybe. But it is still going to come out as a full priced version, right?
So maybe they're
just banking on the people that are buying it. You know, the show's been popular. That's gotten more people into it. They're banking on, enough people will be buying it for the first time through that version.
True. Mm. And I think like I'll give them the Last of Us Part 1 remaster if it means that they get to make... with a huge budget, a new game.
Yeah,
they make the best games in the
world.
That's
kind of the only thing about this too that sort of, tends to stick in the craw a bit is when you just like, we're all just fanging on, what's the next thing? Oh, the show's good, all this stuff's good, but we've just been living in the same world for a bit where it's like, give us a little glimpse of what's coming next.
I think they're starting to approach the point of oversaturation too a little bit.
Yeah.
I've heard the words The Last of Us an awful lot.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a game that we'll be talking about today that is almost just about testing my patience, which is bizarre for a game that I, a game series that I love so much. Mm. But
yeah,
And I think like they've said they're working on Last of Us 3, right? That's in the
pipeline.
I
don't think they've like officially said it, but they've made it pretty clear with interviews around when they were doing the show about like the next chapter of the Last of Us game.
Oh yeah, didn't Mazin like so kind of drop a few little tidbits? I think there was
and we talked recently, obviously, about like the multiplayer thing being very much put on the back burner.
Yeah. I think there was that great period when the show was out where Mazin would drop stuff that he probably shouldn't have about the development of the third game, and then Druckmann would drop stuff that he probably shouldn't have about the layout and the schedule of the second series. Like, just them both interacting with each other's worlds and being like, brother, you're not, that's not out there yet. You're not meant to be talking about the existence of the third game.
They're both the same idea.
Yeah.
You also, you guys, I assume, sit in an office together, right?
Yeah. We both know that, we all know that there's content coming out all the time to consume.
Yes.
This isn't a bombshell. This week's episode of Filthy Casuals is brought to you by the fine folks over there at Manscaped.
They're back. We're back. Both of our backs are hairy. What are we going to do?
We're going to make the beast with two backs and shave each other.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how that works.
Probably don't use their products like during intercourse.
Mid-coitus.
Yeah. Use them before though and maybe it's more likely to be on the cards.
Yeah,
Manscaped, if you haven't ever paid attention, then what they do, they make personal grooming products.
Yep. That's right. They make, well, I'd go so far as to call it the Lawnmower 5.0.
It's one of the ingredients included in their famous performance package. You get the Lawnmower 5.0.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a regular suburban neighborhood with how many lawnmowers are going off over there.
Mm-hmm. They're always doing just the 0.0s. They're never doing like a 0.5 or anything. They're not, doing like
a little patch.
Five Pro.
Yeah. It's one of those just cool 0.0s.
Yeah.
It's a good thing they've sent us out like ones of that to use, and I can tell you that it's a really well-made piece of personal grooming equipment.
They've done it again. Yeah.
If you're looking for it, Black Friday's coming up too, which is the big sale time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, call me crazy, but it's tomorrow.
You fucking lunatic. Is it really? Yeah, damn. Yeah. Well, if you're looking for stuff, if you use the code FILTHY, don't tell anyone this or tell everyone.
I'd rather they told everyone.
Yeah.
If you use the code FILTHY, you get yourself 20% off and free shipping.
Yeah.
It's the time to keep trim and clean. They make a ton of good products to do that. The performance package thing is like a gift set that comes with a bunch of different things in it. Have a look at it there.
Mm.
Go to Manscaped.
It's gift-giving season.
Gift time's coming up.
Yep.
Santa's not going to do it all himself.
No. You know what I like to do as well?
What?
If someone doesn't get me what I wanted, which, look, I don't get a lot of presents. I'm a grown man. What I like to do is give myself a little Christmas present or holiday present, as it were. And fuck me if the performance package 5.0 isn't a great gift to give yourself.
Yeah. Something good to give a grown man too. You go to Manscaped, use the code FILTHY, you'll get 20% off and free shipping. And hey, you're online.
Mm. Yeah.
It's important to use something that is a good online tool. That's the official byline.
Did you go to salesman school?
I went.
Sell me this internet.
NordVPN will gladly do so. They make a really high quality VPN that's easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a bunch of they've got their app on a bunch of different devices. You can use it pretty smoothly across a ton of different places.
Yeah, if you're one of the many people who are like me, and your bank,
well, there's a few, but
apparently it's 10% of the population. No. If your bank is only online, I use a bank that does not have like branches. All of my banking has to be online, so I have to be secure. I'm not going to be like a certain member of this podcast and have all their identity shit stolen once every 6 months.
And they're
once total.
Okay.
The primary function too is to allow yourself to be in different locations around the world, which can be really useful for like booking hotels, for renting cars. If you travel And even if you don't, like, there's a ton of different things that are available weirdly with the internet in different places, and it's crazy. And NordVPN thinks so too, so they've made a way around it.
Yeah.
Go to nordvpn.com/filthy and you get yourself a hot, hot deal for this hot, hot season.
A sexy, sexy deal.
I believe it's 4 free months if you sign up for 2 years, which is...
That's a whole season of the year plus a month.
It's 8, 9 seasons total.
Whoa.
Damn, dude. That's like until Scrubs got bad level of seasons.
Yeah, shit.
Head to nordvpn.com/filthy. Use our deal. Get yourself a deal.
Yeah.
Hang out. Go on.
You don't just get those 4 free months. Like, the price for this VPN service, like the monthly price, is ridiculously low. It's, as far as I'm concerned, the best value for money. It's peanuts.
You guys went to salesman school back in the 1920s, didn't you? Yeah.
Now, buy this snake oil.
Well, you can avoid such things by trusting us and going to nordvpn.com/filthy. Hey, bells and whistles being added to Last of Us Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Bells and whistles, not so much added, unless you consider visual styles to be bells and whistles.
I'd
consider it a bell.
I could
the bell and the whistle. The bell's rusted to shit.
Yeah,
it looks awful. The whistle, when you blow into it, it's like you can barely hear it.
Mm. Okay.
So it's like the whistle's cleaned out, so it's like crisp and like
popped
sounds
a new pee
new
into
and
it.
Like the bell's all polished up, so you can actually see that beautiful gold finish.
Sure,
underneath.
But they're exactly identical.
Yeah,
to
it's the same bell and whistle.
Mm.
We're talking about Super Mario RPG, the re-release of that, which they've dropped the subtitle, which was like Legend of the Seven Stars, I think, on the SNES version.
Yeah, which seems like it would make more sense to call it that than to just call it, in 2023, Super Mario RPG.
It looks pretty funny just having those big letters, because like the Super Mario is half the size of the RPG on the logo.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a funny name.
I love the design of that logo. It's cool.
We've been playing that, me and Tommy.
Mm.
Yep.
It is, if you don't know it,
it's
Super Mario
RPG.
It's
made by the geniuses at Nintendo.
It's, well,
wrong.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's made by the mediocre people who couldn't get into Nintendo.
The geniuses of the Filthy Casuals podcast are here to inform you that, it was Square Enix back in the day on the SNES.
Right.
Or I guess Squaresoft at the time. And it's, I don't know the company who's done the remake thing.
I think their name is Art Plaza.
Right.
I can't remember what.
Sounds like a guy who like lives in New York.
Yeah.
And maybe he paints portraits on the
sidewalk. One of my old professors at uni.
Yeah, he was
pretty easygoing.
They have done, I think they've helped out with some of the like cutscene cinematic stuff in the Dragon Quest games. I think they're a bit more like guns for hire more so than their own.
Yes.
I could be wrong with that. But
it's not a Blue Point or someone whose whole job is to remake games.
But they've done like, so that, yeah, it was a SNES RPG late into the SNES. It was like 96 or something that it came out. And this is exactly that game. It's very similar to the Link's Awakening remake that was like exactly the bones of
the
Game Boy game. But it's been given a visual overhaul that it looks nice. And is like pretty charming and stuff. It looks sort of weird because it's aping the animations from the SNES version, which were like you just have to wiggle the sprite around. Mm-hmm. And there's, so it's like these 3D models kind of jumping up and down. And
there's
like
a bit of that where they've kind of done some stuff where they've made these little cutscenes that they've added in that weren't in the original, obviously. And they look great. Mm. They look really, really good. But then there'll just be stuff where like someone hops on the spot and spins around and. It's also got no, and I kind of do like the restraint in this. It's got no, it's got no voice stuff in it. Like
none.
Mario's not doing any like wahoos or anything like that because he wasn't doing that at that point. Like,
take me back.
I kind of like this weird little muted version of Mario where he never like has like interaction with people in the games. It's the most minimal little bits of jibber jabber that he has, but just having him be completely silent, I kind of like.
I saw some review for some reason. I was like looking at an old magazine or something on the internet, like a review of Super Mario 64 when it came out. And one of the things in that review, they were like, he sounds like fucking Mickey Mouse now, which is really weird, but hey, good game.
It's really, it's hard to remember, how odd it was to hear him speak. And
I think I just wasn't really conscious. I don't know what developmental science says about a seven-year-old. I know your brain isn't formed until you're 25, they reckon.
Yeah.
But
I think I was
yet to see the results of fucking that. But
I think I was the exact right age to hear a character that sounds like Mickey Mouse and not bat an eyelid at it.
I think
right.
I was the same. I think I was like right in with the Wahoos and whatever.
He's a cartoon. He sounds like that.
Anyway, makes he sounds sense. Like nothing in this. And yeah, it's exactly the SNES game, but with these nicer graphics. That yeah, I think like they keep the style of the pretty weird-looking SNES game.
I haven't played this yet, which is kind of a shame because I think I might get the most benefit out of it. I never played it. I love
I'll
how...
I'll get Adam a fit out of it.
Tommy?
Say that again.
Ben's going to get...
Did I just fall asleep for an hour? What happened?
Ben's going to get the most benefit out
of it. Oh, the most... I'll get the... I've been getting a lot of Tommy fit out of it.
Excellent.
What does that mean?
So why what would I'm wearing you get... right now. Tommy fit.
Yeah, I think I am drawn to how it looks. I was also drawn to how it looked in the trailer where they showed the original. I was like... Yeah. I was into it. Love a Squaresoft RPG.
So I'm really enjoying it. It is the bones of the original. It's got some very mild quality of life stuff. So it's the turn-based combat where you're doing sort of timed button presses to make your attacks land properly, and it gives you a bit more cue for them than it did in the original. So it'll bring up a little thing. It'll bring up a little mark above your character's head when you're meant
point.
To hit the
button. You've just seen Solid Snake and that right. pops up above your head.
And once you're doing it properly, regularly enough, it'll stop bringing that up.
Oh.
But then if you slip and you start fucking up the timing again, it'll bring it back up. So it's got That's this kind of like nice intuitive thing where it sort of is like, if you're not getting it, it'll sort of start to guide you. But then if you are getting it, it's just like, cool, yep, you get it. You don't you don't need to be hearing from silly old me.
Because when you like equip a different weapon for each character, they all have different timings. And each of the different like spells and whatever have different timings. Each different attack from an enemy has a different point, obviously, where you need to press the button to defend.
Right.
And I'm really enjoying it too.
Yeah, like, it's very similar, I think, to a game we'll talk about in a bit, where it is a very... simplistic version of this style of game that is one is tight in its execution. It is fun to play, but it doesn't really have any wrinkles about it. It's I mean, obviously because of when it came out, it's a pretty straight down the line JRPG that is really carried a lot by its presentation and how much you like these characters. And the soundtrack has all been like re-recorded and redone. I think the music in it's fantastic. I love how it sounds.
And I really like the weird look of like the original one.
Mm. Yeah.
And the way it's carried over into this. Like I think it's cool to have that thing that used to be more the case where each different Mario thing didn't really know what the fuck Mario was. So all looked a bit and had weird little creatures and guys that weren't in any of the others.
I think that's the best. That's the thing I'm enjoying about it the most as like a revisiting of this piece of kind of history where all they've got at this point is... Yeah, the Super Nintendo Mario's to draw from. Like, the 64 one isn't even out yet, so...
And all of those have been so different from one another, where, like,
1
and 2 and 3 and then World and Yoshi's Island...
Yeah.
All pretty different styles and looks and feelings.
And the
and
Game
whatever.
Boy ones and all that shit,
And bits of tone and characters and settings and stuff, but no real story, so...
Right.
Square basically get given... Like, Miyamoto goes to Square and is like, hey, I think it'd be cool to put Mario in an RPG. Would you guys be up for doing this? So they... It seems like they get given pretty free rein to do what they wanted with this. So, like, the characters in your party... Like, yeah, if this got made now, it would be... You know, it's Mario and Luigi and Yoshi, but Square, like basically half of the characters that you get to choose from in your party are characters that Square invented for this.
Right.
That have then never come back in any form.
Yeah, because Square are like on top of the world at this point because the last games they put out are like Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger and like this. So they're really firing and you're right. And this is, like you said, a simplified paired back version.
But then with this timing stuff of the combat, which like I've seen in more recent, like I think Live Alive had... Again, it's been introduced into other turn-based games.
Yeah, experimenting with stuff around the time, though. Because even like the active time battle, like every sort of game they were putting out had slightly different systems. And this one, if you've played the Paper Mario games or like the Mario and Luigi ones, they're informed by this.
Is a funny one where like, yeah, they make this and it's just, here's Mario in an RPG. Mm. And then the idea of a Mario RPG splits off into sort of two directions of Paper Mario and the Mario and Luigi handheld kind of very comic booky kind of games.
And then Paper Mario splits off into like, let's make it fucking completely
Let's
weird,
change the system every time. But they've never gone back to the well of just straight up, here's Mario in an RPG.
Right.
I guess until Mario Rabbids kind of, but like, it is neat.
Origami King was pretty RPG-ish, I thought, too.
Oh, I mean more just in terms of the style and the design of it. Like, that still is
like
the
literally
Paper
just
Mario
doing
world.
A turn-based RPG.
Yeah, like he's in the Mushroom Kingdom and he's going around. And,
right.
And, yeah, I love the little gaps that Square have had to fill in with their own stuff. Like, I think it was because Square and Nintendo fell out not long after this, and I believe that Square owned the rights to the characters that they created for
that
this, which is why they've, like...
People were calling for Geno to be in Smash Brothers for forever.
And like they fit in. It's interesting to imagine a world where Nintendo had just been allowed to keep them and just have them in it. Like Mallow's this little cloud man who thinks he's a frog, and he goes to visit his grandpa, and he's surrounded by his grandpa and all his siblings, and they're all frogs, and they're like, we've got a shocking revelation for you, Mallow. You're not really a frog.
Wow,
it's like the episode of Rocco's Modern Life where Heifers
finds out he's adopted.
Wow. And it's so many inspiration ripples throughout time.
Joe Murray just playing this game being like, this gives me an idea.
The whole thing's
something that I think is happening at right now.
Yeah.
The whole thing's presented from an isometric, which is what a cute European says about measurement.
Oh.
Nice.
An isometric viewpoint that it feels good to control with the stick because you can actually point in the like it was always weird on the I only played a bit of the original on like emulated.
You're pushing up and you're going diagonal.
Right. Yeah.
Also, I don't believe that this game ever came out in Australia, I think.
May not have.
I think because it was so late in the life of the Super Nintendo. But yeah, it would make I am really enjoying it. I think it moves at a quicker pace than I was expecting for something of this era.
It feels
era.
Really old.
Yeah.
And I think that's the case with a lot of those RPGs, if you go visit them from back then, that they are kind of weirdly snappy.
Yeah.
Because RPGs, especially these days, have a lot of time to like sink into the world and lots of places to
and
explore
and stuff.
And a lot
of cutscenes, and they just don't really have the option of doing that.
This is zipping along, and so it'll be like walking around a town, talking to people, getting into battles that are like you and two others from your party set up on one side. Very traditional stuff with like a limited amount of things to do, and it's all pretty simplified. And then in between that, as you go through, really often they'll just chuck a little mini game at you.
It's cool. So there's not, you're not solving puzzles in dungeons, but when you're walking around between towns and battles, they'll be like you're doing a little minecart race or you're kind of
falling down a waterfall.
Yeah,
you've got to
running
pick
up a
coins.
Hill. They're neat. They're nothing too involved. But again, they're sort of such a different thing than what you're used to getting in an RPG of this style in this era.
It's cute and it's like really charming, and the way that it moves along is like very Moorish. Like you're not spending too long on anything and all the battles are really easy and like you're kind of zipping through it, but it's like engaging still, especially because the timing thing really does just keep you paying attention.
Right.
And it's funny and cute, and also the fact that it is, Square have just added in a lot of their own stuff, so it's not just, Bowser joins your party pretty early on. Like you're not going to rescue Princess Peach from him.
Yeah, right.
You're, going and all of a sudden stumbling across this other bad guy who's got his own castle, and like all the little bits and pieces of writing around that are like pretty fun and silly and cartoony. And so there is this real thing of like, oh, I wonder what the next weird, because even though this is 96, it is all this stuff that we've never seen brought back into any of the other Mario stuff, so it is all pretty fresh even though it's
and I like the game and I think just similar to the thing we were talking about before, where it sits on that remaster spectrum of how much you think this is worth it, I think it's towards the lower end of that. Where like I like what how they've redone it, but it's the exact same skeleton as so like if they'd have chucked this game on the SNES part of the online thing for the same price, you get 2 years of the online pass or
right.
whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's the same game. And I don't know how much more you're getting out of this redo. Same with the Link's Awakening one, the Metroid Prime remaster, like the Game Boy Mario and Donkey Kong one they're doing
yeah,
soon.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The Thousand Year Door one they're doing. They're really...
Well, it's like you said, like we said before with this, it is a lot of it is down to individual context, right? So yeah. Like I loved the Link's Awakening one, never played it, bought it for the Switch, loved it, like one of my favorite games of that year. Didn't think twice about how much it cost in comparison to like other new games I played that year, because sure. It was a new game for me.
I think with yeah. that yeah, and that's the same case where I love the coat of paint that they've put on this. I think the new fully like full band version of those chiptune yeah. songs sounds fantastic. I love how it looks, and I probably, if I was to, you know, try and engage with it on the original hardware or the original version of it, I might bounce off it a little quicker than like I played through all of that Link's Awakening remake, because I just loved how it looked and felt. And
right.
you know, anytime I sit down to do like, oh, I'll play this old Game Boy game, I probably give it a couple of hours and then get bored. Or just the fact that it is like something yeah. new has come yeah. out tricks a part of my brain into being like, I'm playing a new thing.
And yeah. I've literally done that where I thought like half of it in the past, but it was like the first hour or something. Yeah. Like I hadn't played as much as I thought at all.
Right. Yeah.
This one is, I'm just carrying through more quickly than I did.
And I think if you've never played it, it is like, right. I think it's 12, 15 hours. So it's, yeah, you know, it's a decent sized single player game that
it
looks
saves,
and sounds good. And
saves a lot more regularly too. Small yeah. thing, but it had like save points in the original.
And I think compared to like playing the original version in some way
yeah.
that you can access it versus or playing it on the online service.
Most recently from Nintendo, it was like on the Wii and the Wii U shop, right. I think, for like yeah. $5 or whatever yeah, the SNES yeah, games
yeah.
were.
Or versus, yeah, buying a version with a coat of paint that you own, it's just going to appeal differently to different people's like use cases, right? Yeah.
Totally. I
think it yeah. would be cool. I mean, the hope is that this is something that they test the waters with relatively low stakes to just give it a coat of paint and yeah. put it out, and then... It would be cool if, I mean, I doubt it would be Square, it would probably be them internally, but test the waters with this and then
yeah.
maybe do a follow-up in this style would be cool. Because I also think that, like, it would be nice if they had, like, maybe modernized bits of it and fleshed it out a little bit more. But I also can understand that this has got, like, such a cult classic following that... Mm. Maybe they felt like their hands were tied, and if they right. tinker with it too much, there's going to be people that are a bit up in arms if they potentially get parts of it wrong.
Well, and the charming stuff about it, like all the cute writing and it's like kind of funny and all that stuff is still there. That yeah, still yeah. like holds
even,
up for the most
yeah,
part.
Yeah, even down to one thing that I don't like about it that I do wish they had done something with is like it's a little weird that when blocks of text come up, there is... nothing. Not that I want them to be voice acted, but even just like the sound of, you know, a lot of games have the sound of just like text scrolling yeah. across the screen. It's just so weird to see these blocks of text come up and they're just in complete silence. It feels like there's something turned off.
In right. the cutscenes that are like nicely animated and look, you know, not quite, but like in the same sort of 3D look of like the movie or whatever, but with this squat little Mario, but and not to that level.
I love
you know
him.
What I
mean. See, I love that they didn't use the like... default go-to current version of the model. Yeah.
They got Chibi Mario.
Yeah, he looks all fucked up and little. It's sick.
But nice. In those cutscenes that were just played out with sprites on the SNES version and now they're all animated and whatever, you're getting just these big wads of text of the yeah. speech happening in there down the bottom of the screen, and it looks weird.
Right. It's a shame, yeah. It could have been a bit fun to have some of it be... voiced, or at the very least a bit of like a Banjo Kazooie.
Get Banjo in there.
Just have it.
He's
or
free.
Everyone
he
be
could
Banjo.
Voice it.
Yeah.
Or.
But yeah, I think it'd make a great. I think there's enough in it, even if you are familiar enough with the genre. Mm. But also, if you're someone who's not familiar with the genre, I think it's a good starting point for
yeah.
a JRPG
right.
if you've not
yeah.
played one before.
And I do think if you have access to like one of the old like Wii Shop versions of this or whatever, like this isn't so transformative that you're missing out by playing one of those old ones.
Yeah, right. If you'd
rather save, what is it, like 60 Australian or something?
70, maybe. Yeah. It might be 69.
I think it's not quite up at their full, like what they charge for Tears of the Kingdom, but it's
10
a,
bucks off.
It's a full game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the, I'm finding myself really drawn through it by the presentation and how it all looks, which
is... I'm liking it. Half McDonald's.
Yeah.
They're loving it, you see.
Yeah, is like half of Love? I feel like it's closer up there.
I was like going to say like 80% further away.
Well, really? Covers a wider gamut. I think anything from like sort of 40 to 80%, I like it. I guess not 40.
I guess it depends what we're talking about. If we're talking about food, as in McDonald's, liking something versus loving it, I don't feel like there's a huge gap of that in terms of a meal. But
I've enjoyed
romantic relationships, someone saying, yeah, I like you.
I was thinking more in anything. Like covers a huge swath.
It's a big scale. Yeah. I've enjoyed lately if someone cooks something nice and I'm eating it, if someone's, you know, if I've been to dinner and they've cooked something nice, complimenting them like I've never heard of any chefs, but going like, oh, get a load of Ronald McDonald over here.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And then they're like, what? And then I have to explain why I said it.
They're like, you could have just said you liked it.
Yeah, so I've never eaten dinner somewhere twice. They don't invite me back for some reason. But yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Bit of fun.
Just quickly before we go into the other one too, remember the sizzle from before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I hate it, but I can't stop playing Modern Warfare 3.
Cool boy.
Because the multiplayer is actually really fun in this one. And there's huge problems with it, like as a product and as a concept and as what it represents and shit. But like they've tuned it well and like it feels good to play. And those maps from back in the day are pretty fun. Mm. There's a couple of like small things that I forgot to sort of mention last time. There's weird bugs with it where like you'll win, but just all the letters won't come up. So it'll say like Vitori and stuff like that. Or just weird bugs like that are like, how is this in here?
Yeah.
That's a new one.
Yeah. Some and it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens pretty regularly.
Fuck.
It's so strange the way that that game, like it used to take forever to get up to like level 55 as the top and then you prestige, which you can't do yet, but like at some point you can.
Mm-hmm.
That's really quick now, that progress, because they want you to progress the battle pass, which is the monetized thing,
right,
which has some of the worst looking design that I've, it's like going to like a nu metal fan website in 2001, ooh, just like the shitty gifts they give you as prizes for that thing.
TommyDaslow.com in about 48 weeks.
Well, apparently that shit's popular now. Like, it's crazy how
it's weirdly weird.
Like the ultimate thing that you win out of this battle pass is you get to play as Spawn. Like
Todd McFarlane's Spawn.
It's really weird.
I mean, but that's what we're experiencing though, right? Zoomer culture is a throwback.
I don't think this is Zoomer culture though.
Sort of goth.
Yeah,
like, retreading the emo stuff from 2000s and like the low jeans and all of the baggy clothes.
Yes. It really sucks to be the age now where it's like, I get what our parents meant when they're like, hey, we didn't wear bell bottoms all the time.
Right.
So shut up. You loved disco.
I don't think it's that because Call of Duty has been that for quite some time.
Sure, I think its own weird little like no style.
But I've been really enjoying looking at all those skulls go rawr at me and shit. It's very funny.
Fuck.
And then the other like small thing I just wanted to mention that I forgot to mention last week, but I was talking about this on Discord with someone, that like the way the unlocks work is you get some for leveling up, you get some for other stuff, and then you get some for doing like your daily challenges. Yes. Every day there's like a refresh to get 2 kills with this, do this with this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the thing that it will unlock if you complete those challenges is a part of one of those challenges. So you just get stuck for that day.
Yeah,
so like almost immediately I got into the thing where it was like, hey, get 2 kills with Semtex to unlock Semtex.
Oh.
Fuck you. That doesn't make any sense.
That's so dumb. Yeah. I that has reminded me, I've continued to play Marvel Snap and it it changes its own economy. Right. Every like 3 months,
yeah.
Sometimes more regularly.
Is that the seasons? Is that how long they are?
Each season's 4 weeks, but they will like
patch a season.
Yeah.
1 month.
They'll patch the game, and they like. And I think this is common with sort of like the online versions of Magic and stuff. They will rebalance the cards.
Yeah.
So they will. You'll like buy a card for using a currency that will take you months to acquire, and then you'll like, have it for a bit.
Like me holding an air gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's buff and nerf. That's the two things.
That's right. That's it. And it can be very frustrating for someone who doesn't obsessively read all of these balance right. updates and shit, where yeah. you're like, literally you'll play a game and then you'll be like, that card that I have that I always play to do this, it doesn't work like that anymore.
Well, that's why they changed it, because you were fucking people up too much.
Yeah, yeah, but then also, so yeah, the thing that you reminded me of is that they have like, they introduced a second game mode. You, initially, it was just like you play against random people you match make mm-hmm. against, and if you win a game, you get whatever cubes that you had wagered on that game, mm. and you go up ranks using those cubes, and you go down ranks if you lose them. And the goal is to get to rank 100. And after that point, you can't go down any further.
Right.
Essentially, it's you're hitting.
You've like, just won that season.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can fuck around from that point on. They introduced a different mode called Conquest, where it's like, you will play sort of like the same person several times.
Oh, okay.
And you'll have to. It's like best sure. of eight cubes, basically.
Right.
And at the end of that, you'll like move through to the second round and the third round, and then you get a ticket for the second batch of games, and you're going from silver to gold to infinite. And now they've introduced in the north
silver gold. It's our 50th wedding anniversary. It's our infinite wedding anniversary.
He's infinity.
I've bought you a black hole. you can get from the normal mode. You'll occasionally unlock these little caches. I don't know if you guys remember that from when you did play it, but sometimes it'll be credit, sometimes it'll be a new card.
You're yeah. Yeah,
moving
yeah, yeah.
through this ladder. Sometimes, and like the only way mainly you will get like new cards when you're a new person is go through up that ladder and unlock a little cache. But sometimes now those caches will actually just have like a ticket for that other mode, which is just useless if you never play that mode.
Yeah, right.
So they've kind of... And I think it is, again, it's to slow people's progress down.
Mm.
It's to slow the acquisition of cards.
Keep them engaged.
Keep them engaged. Make them maybe spend some real money every now and then on some gold to buy those, you know, like it's... And I think the people who were super into this game from the start and would like defend some of the more controversial and shitty practices throughout the past year have started to kind of turn on this right. economy of it as well.
That's always how these things seem to work. It's the same with Modern Warfare, where it's like, okay, people are in it. Should we push it as far as we can? Oh, yep. We're a little over. Hey, next year we're going back to what you all loved.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. And like just seeing, a bundle in the app that costs $150. Oh. And it's like...
Same with the COD points in
right,
this.
Right, right. Like, and it's preying on people who are addicted to the game.
Mm.
And they're addicted because it's like, you know, they use casino, you know,
sure.
One-armed bandit practices to fucking hook them in.
And same as with Call of Duty, though, like it has some of the best feeling, chuck your card out there, and right. some of the best like deck building stuff. And this one of it has like the sliding around feels fucking great. The movement and the time to kill and everything feels really good.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's hard to
yeah,
it's a weird spot to be in.
Yeah,
it feels odd.
Well, I've been playing, before we get onto the other big new release, I've been playing something that is free from being tainted by any of these practices.
Oh yeah,
okay.
I've been playing an old Game Boy game called Mole Mania. You ever play Mole Mania?
Dude, they patched Mole Mania. They nerfed the moles. Yeah. It's fucked.
You only get one mole a month now?
That's crazy.
That's not maniac at all.
You've got to get 50 moles to unlock Mania, yeah. which is actually 400 real life dollars yeah. if you were to do it that way. It takes too long.
The fuck is Mole Mania?
It's described on Wikipedia as being perhaps the most obscure game that's been made by Shigeru Miyamoto.
Oh, okay.
Miyamoto.
So, yeah.
Mm.
What?
Did you really not hear it?
Yeah. It's a little Game Boy game, top down, you're a little mole.
Great.
Evil little farmer comes along and kidnaps all your family, so you got to go on a little adventure to get them back.
He's done a shit job of demoling that farm too. If he leaves the most vengeful mole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the most powerful.
It's like Fantastic Mr. Mole, sort of.
Yeah,
right?
I guess so. Yeah, no wonder he's manic.
So you're top down. You're kind of walking around these little screens. You're trying to get through the exit of that screen to go on. So like each overall level is, you know, a bunch of just square screens, kind of interconnected.
Are you digging through dirt?
So you're moving around, and then you'll hit like a point where there's like a brick wall or whatever that you can't get through. So then you're burrowing underground. Mm. And underground, you've got like a little separate path that you can follow, and you can kind of switch your view to see where you're at in relation to the surface. And so then you might be digging around underground, and underground there might be a bunch of rocks that you can't get past. So you're having to sort of navigate these levels by going, you know, traversing the top and the bottom.
Right. And trying to maintain, like remember, like, oh, if I go over here and I pop back down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then dig holes and push enemies into holes. There's these little cabbages that you're having to like push into holes that get you extra health and stuff.
A cabbage loves the ground.
Yeah.
They'd have to be happy down there.
Yeah. It's cool. It's such a neat little formula that really works as a little puzzle action sort of game. It's I mean, yeah, given that it's a Miyamoto game.
Right.
And given how much this company loves to re-release their old product, yeah, it is strange that it never got a HD upscaling, because it still feels fun to play.
Like right. Mole Mania DS would make sense from your description too, of having the top and the bottom screens.
Yeah, and
one of the famous aspects of the DS.
Yeah.
Even if they just did what they did with the Link's Awakening or whatever, and just really redid the graphics, even just the narrative of like, hey, this is a Miyamoto game that most people don't know about, you'd think would be enough to garner interest from people. But it's worth tracking down if you've got the means to play Game Boy games in any way. It's really fun.
Mole Mania.
Mole Mania.
Mole Mania Mania is sweeping the nation.
They're calling it Mole Mania.
That sounds like the kind of little news broadcast cutscene that might appear in the Persona franchise. They love a little bit of like, and the Phantom Thieves have struck once again.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, Shibuya is whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it well enough. One of the busiest crosswalks in the world.
Yeah.
They love to start a game with a news broadcast and then cut to we're in a politician's office for some reason.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The diet. I keep hearing about the diet in this game.
Yes, which for anyone who doesn't know, it's just like it's their parliament.
Yep.
It's their parliament. It's called the diet for some reason.
They eat all the documents after they've read them.
Hell
for
yeah.
It's weird to translate it all into English but still call it the diet. You know what I mean? Like, you're not using the local term for, you know, a carrot.
No, they're not.
Persona 5 Tactica.
Persona 5 Tactica came out last week. Yeah, Friday.
Same day.
It's on Game Pass. Yeah, yeah. I made the choice to play the free game. Or the game that I was already subscribed to. And it takes place, for those who've played Persona 5, it takes place like during the story. Like,
yeah. Oh,
interesting.
Like after in a semester break, right?
Yeah, three quarters of the way through.
Oh,
because
there was
a
time skip, I guess, in that game at some point.
I think, yeah.
And so is this the version with the other character from Royal as well? Is this that story? Because I think 5 Strikers didn't have that character in it either.
It Strikers didn't, and I don't believe if they're in it, I've not encountered them yet.
Yeah.
I'm like 4 hours in so far.
Okay,
I think maybe they are. I'm not sure because
I don't know when they show up in Royal either. I never played Royal. So
what I understand about this is that it's got spoilers for main Persona 5.
Yes,
if you haven't played that, which wasn't really the case of Strikers,
right?
And also, I guess, similar to Strikers, like, you mechanically you could play it, having not played Persona 5, but it really, it's three quarters of the way through the story and it assumes that you...
100%.
Like, Strikers is at least, like, they're catching up after that story had ended. This is like... This feels like an episode of a TV show.
Yeah,
weirdly,
yeah.
In how you're, you know, being presented it to. It's like, hey, here's the gang all again, and now we're doing this.
Yeah, totally. It doesn't... Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know, look, the title of it might give it away. It's a tactical game. It's a strategy. It's a turn-based strategy game. Isometric presentation. You can swivel the camera around, though. It's very Mario plus Rabbids. And I did initially see it compared to XCOM as like a shorthand, but it's more Mario plus Rabbids.
Yeah.
It's free movement range.
Right.
More cartoony.
I've done the tutorial bit in the first like main mission bit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's no I haven't encountered any kind of overworld stuff.
No, I was going to say.
So it's all.
There's no overworld, let alone like the sort of, you know, companion building stuff, the social links.
Right.
Nothing of that. Because even Strikers had a simplified version of that. This is literally like 2D chibi animated cutscenes and then tactical battles.
Strikers felt like a Strikers really did feel like a sequel in that it,
yeah.
it followed on and it was...
It was surprisingly...
It was all the
yeah.
other like trimmings, but just the combat style was different.
Yeah.
This feels like a spin because the art style is different as yeah. well.
They had like areas and like specific camera angles from cutscenes in Persona 5 that were recreated in Strikers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah, yeah.
And that you would see further cutscenes from. And yeah, this is... I think I didn't play it, but it's more like the Q games or whatever, which they right. were more like dungeon explorer-y things
yeah.
that would have just sort of dialogue between the main bits to like have a flavor to it. But yeah. it was kind of... more about that gameplay on its own.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is just level.
Well, and then you go to a little hideout in between and you can do your shop and your...
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like a lot of visual novel stuff in between.
Yeah,
as well.
it's more like visual novel, level, visual novel.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I love this world. I love the characters. It's filled with like charm and it's so... Like it, despite it being visually a different... style, it retains a lot of that sort of character and charm of that game. That was why it was so appealing. The music is still really good.
Cool.
But it is just... I'm finding it quite tedious.
I do think that that okay. is the case with like these games in general. At the beginning, though, I'm feeling like... I'm feeling a bit the same. Like, I just want to play a Persona tactical game. Like,
yeah,
I like how they write these stories. I like how they write these characters. So I don't, it's not like I hate this stuff. It's more just like, yeah, I'm in this world. I get it. Like, I don't yeah. need all this flavor. Like, I get it for setting up
yeah.
Persona 5 because you're being introduced to this whole world.
The concepts,
I probably don't
all
need
that stuff.
As
yeah.
much introduction to this, but also I think that's just, I'm hoping that that's just how they structure yeah. their games and that it takes a couple of hours for them to really just go like, bang, here it is, here's the level.
Maybe, and I do, like I'm thinking of, yeah, the other games that are similar to it. I'm sure they were all a lot more snappy in terms of getting to the battles.
Mm.
And I think that the reason that I'm finding the story stuff in this tedious is it's so like a photocopy. It's like, ah, yes, you're in a... new version of what we called the palaces,
yeah.
called some other thing.
Right.
And this
tactical
person
called palaces.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. This person, doesn't like you cause, some other, you know, it's really just
bit,
like,
and you turn right. up with the whole squad cause it happens. It takes place at a part of the main game where you've got everyone in your party.
Yeah.
So you turn up with your whole squad, but she's brainwashed all of them except for Joker and Morgana. So you've got to go, you know, to sort of have a very like constructed thing of
right.
you not just having an entire party to pick from, you know, you having to like unlock all these people.
Yeah.
Very kind of manufactured way of doing that.
It's, which, yeah. That all sounds kind of fine to me as a way of setting it up or whatever. But then if you're having it be explained to the point where it's getting tedious.
I'm certainly like I'm skipping as much as I can. I wish that there was... but like you can skip a cutscene, you know, by just like pressing start and skipping the whole thing. But this, the dialogue scenes, I'm just fucking hammering the
yeah.
button, just like
because you want to see it, but like
yeah. Which is a shame because the gameplay is great. Like yeah. it's fantastic. It's yeah.
again, it's I'm not minding that stuff so much. And again, it is the same as Super Mario RPG, where just the bones of this
mm-hmm.
without this presentation and these characters and this style and charm to it, if this was just like a new game that didn't look like this, it'd be like, oh, this is Mario Rabbids.
Right.
I don't feel the need to engage with this more.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is that fun style of gameplay with these characters that I know and really like and this great style and music to it, it's like, all right, I'll sit through your 40-minute dialogue story thing.
A lot of that type of stuff can be sometimes mood as well. Like with Persona 5 itself, it there's a lot of it in there, and if it didn't capture you, you know, like, so if you're in the mood for a big sink in, here we go, I'm watching an anime, whatever. Mm. Like,
and I think, I think knowing that it's like, yes, not super long, like 16, 17 hours.
Okay.
And I've played, 4 hours, genuinely half cutscene / dialogue / you know, like, and I guess a lot, there's also a lot of tutorial stuff,
yeah,
which feels self-explanatory, although, you know, I know it's like you've got to tell people how to, you know, do
attacks and shit.
Yeah.
I just feel like I just wanted to get to the battles a lot
more. It would have been nice if, and I know that they can't do this for every game, and it was cool that they had as much of that in Strikers as they did. So that was kind of probably their version of this. But if it was half as much cutscene dialogue stuff and it had a bit more of the like walking around the city, eating your hamburger, right, going to the gym kind of stuff, because that's, you know, such a fun part of these games. And maybe then you're talking about sort of making a whole different game where you've got to like build those mechanics into the battle in some way. But it really does stick out when you're not imagining like, based Persona 5 or Strikers without that stuff in it and it just being this. It's like, oh, yeah, that's not as fun at all.
It'd be a little bit more because, you know, you have no agency, you don't have control in these cutscenes. You're just reading dialogue. It's not voice acted. You're just reading dialogue and going skip, 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 skip until the next battle. Whereas, you could at least walk around and explore a little bit.
Yeah.
But I really like the battles. There are some mechanics in it that are brand new to this kind of game as far as I can tell. There's like...
The charge thing is cool.
Yeah, yeah, the charge is good.
So if you rest on a turn, each character has like a special skill that they unlock if you don't do an action with them on the turn before.
Right.
So it's a bit like... Don't just shoot your gun for the sake of it, even though it's going to do no damage. If you rest, then on their next turn, their gun can deal damage even if the enemy is behind cover. Mm. So just, things like that kind of open you up a lot more.
That's cool. And I think, again, because we're in this cool era of like not so much grid-based movement in these tactical games, you can surround an enemy. And then if you down them, which you genuinely do by attacking them when they're out of cover, you can then do what is like an all-out attack in the Persona games. You basically triangulate with your characters and you can do a big group attack that like takes off a bunch of damage. Like
but it'll take down everyone that's in that zone. So if you kind of spread out and you can down one but have ended up flanking like five of them that were in a cluster. Right.
As in like if they're in like the Venn diagram bit of like circles surrounding each of those characters sort of thing.
You just have to form like a triangle with your three team members.
So no, like it literally just draws a triangle between your individual points. So it's not the radius. That's cool. Using the Persona powers in a game like this is also interesting. Like, and I guess it's probably comparable to like weapon types in other ones, but like using knockback, using burn effects, you know, but like using knockback to position enemies to then get them in like an area of effect attack.
Having SP points as well and having to think about that in a battle like this, which something like Mario Rabbids doesn't have. Like you've got finite items and some of your weapons would have like a two-turn cooldown, but hitting a point in the battle where it's like, oh, I've got no more.
Yeah.
I can't use my persona anymore.
And maybe later on in the game you get a better balance between the gameplay and the story or something potentially. But like I think it's also fair enough to say that if within like 4+ hours of playing it, you're like, oh, I'm finding this a little grating.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard though with a JRPG especially where sometimes it truly is 5 hours until that. Like I remember the start of Persona 5 being it that first dungeon that you go through, it's all tutorial, it's long cutscene and going in and out of the metaverse and like it took a while to stick with me because that felt like about 5 hours until I was really playing the game.
It definitely was, and it had a similar effect. I think I'm just cognizant of the fact that this game is like...
it's a way bigger percentage.
Less than a fifth.
So far.
Of that
and also it's like
time,
you're probably only playing this because you're across this world anyway. So just get us in. There's a new baddie. Okay.
And I think it's picking... The pace is improving as I go, but... It's a shame that I'm already like sick enough of the story to like just want to skip it. you know, like I think if it was paced a bit better from the start, I would not be as annoyed.
I clearly didn't suck you in.
Yeah. Which is like, it's still, I'm actually a lot more impressed by how it looks than I thought. I thought the chibi thing would be a genuine turn off.
Right.
It is well drawn. The cutscenes and stuff are animated well. The sort of slightly steampunk, like medieval or like Victorian era aesthetic within this version of the metaverse is cool. Like it's really well designed.
And once you're kind of watching it in action, I'm finding myself go like, I don't really remember how this looks different to what the other one. It's not that stark, really.
I think because of the scale of it, right? It's like if you were going to have them in normal proportions, but have a big battlefield, they'd just be tiny little characters. Yeah. So it
and
makes
Morgana just
looks
the same, which is great.
Yeah,
yeah, but I think it's just I think I'm only finding it tedious because it didn't quite grab me, and I think it didn't quite grab me because it is doing the exact same sort of structure and like superficial, you know, version of this story that I've seen in Persona 5, Persona 5 Royal, and Persona 5 Strikers.
And it's just sort of doing that thing that can really grate at the start of this kind of game where the main thing is, even if, I mean, putting aside whether or not you're sucked in by the story, it's just like every beat is going for maybe 3 times as long as it, like it just feels like it's telling you the same stuff for 3 times the length that it needs to, you know?
Yes.
Like, again, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, we're here and she's the the thing.
Oh, yeah, the girl from the dream room's here and she gives us weapons. Cool. Yeah.
And
oh,
then it's another, like, yeah, right. Hang on.
Why are you calling me on the phone to remind me?
Why are we saying this again? Yeah, we get it. She's here.
Even when stuff goes through the tutorial bit, like Pikmin 4 was one of my favorite games this year, and the worst part of that game is that the tutorial goes for too long.
And in a way that's not... Yeah, enjoyable. And
if it bugs you at the start, I think that's fair enough to be like, I didn't want to play much more of this game because it was bugging me at the start. Even if, like, Final Fantasy 13 was a classic one of people being like, oh, after 18 hours, it gets really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, cool, man. Well, I'll just put half a work week into
it. Right, right. Yeah. I could watch a bunch of movies and that. But
and it's weirdly, it's not like it's not good. It's just like extra stuff that's in there. And I don't even really think the extra stuff, all that other stuff, I don't even really think it's bad. It's just like, just very drawn out.
Yes. Well, and I'm speaking purely from a conceptual point of view because I haven't played this, but I feel like I want to still, and maybe one of those things where when there's less great stuff all over the place to jump into.
But it does feel like, it's weirdly, two very similar games coming out on the same day that are pretty simplistic versions overall of the genre that they're doing.
Yes.
That are completely live or die by how much you're already invested in the characters that they're adapting and the style that they're doing it in, which is, whether or not it's to your taste, I think is like done to such a high polished level in both of them in terms of like the quality of the music and the art direction and stuff. Like maybe it doesn't work for you, but they're both like so polished in what they're doing.
I can imagine a world where I didn't play Royal and maybe didn't like put in as many hours to Strikers as I did, where I'm like, oh, finally I get to return to the world of Persona 5.
My friends are back.
But I want to say, like, I love playing the game. I'm frustrated. I feel want to keep playing these battles. They're really fun.
Maybe if I was dropped in and didn't, I mean, it doesn't give you really any setup as to who these people are, but maybe muddling my way through it, I'd be a bit more fine with all that stuff.
Yeah,
because I'd be trying to piece together the world a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah.
And I wonder if there's more gameplay stacked later.
Yes, there may well be. And I think
it kind of feels like too, like this surely has to be the last thing they do in the world of Five. So it feels to me a bit like the creative team going like, "Hey, this is the last time we're gonna be doing stuff with these characters. So we've got all these like." You know, we want to have a bit, you know, this is our last chance to be like writing dialogue and doing all this stuff with them. So let's like really flesh it out.
And I do hope because, we don't get all of the characters in this game. Like you're playing at the start of this game, you're mainly playing with Joker, Morgana, Anne.
The very beginning is this Joker and Morgana and this new person that you meet.
Yeah, there's a new
person.
And
then I just assume that you're slowly unlocking all of the team, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Like I'm coming up on 5 hours in and you don't quite have access to everyone. But I don't know. It's cool. It's a cool game. I'm ready for a new Persona though.
I'm ready for that thing that we saw the trailer of and we all assumed it was 6, but it's called, I don't know, Memento.
Metaphor.
Fistos?
Metaphor.
Metaphor.
I think it's Metaphor. And then it's got
it's Metaphor something.
And something, like it used to be called Refantasia, but I think they changed the subtitle maybe.
It was
Metaphor.
That looks rad.
Yeah, that looks sick.
Yep.
Do I have to have played the first 3?
Metas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I barely. What was I going to say about this game?
It's good. It's fun. I wish I could play more of the... I don't remember.
Always just good hearing new music from these folks too.
Maybe you'll play more by next week.
Oh, yeah. Even. I definitely will. Yeah. And I hope, as you say, it becomes more about... Because the battles are not particularly long either.
Okay.
I want more gameplay and I want to get to it faster, I guess.
Yeah.
And I hope that that is the case as I progress.
Britney Spears style.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask, is there anything major coming out next week?
I don't remember because my brain is flooded with urine and it needs to come out of my body.
Yeah, I don't know.
Really soon. I feel like we're getting a couple of quiet weeks here. There's that Avatar game later in the year.
Oh, yeah. That's like in the sixth or something.
The Game Awards that same week.
I reckon I will spend the next week playing more of this game and I'll tell everyone if it's becomes more to my taste.
I'm enjoying both of them and I'm annoyed that they're out at the same time because it feels they're both games that you just kind of want to like sink into the rhythm of it.
Right.
And where, Mario RPG is like not really making you sit. I mean, there's little bits of text, but not to the same extent. It's very snappy, but
And it's all cute and fun. You know? I've been walking around seeing what every toad's got to say.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And they're I own a shop.
Yeah, I'm friendly.
What's up?
Yeah, you don't get to walk around and see what everyone has to say. Like, there's just a menu in the hideout.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I get that that's a whole extra thing of development time, but... In something like this, you really do miss that little bit of...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Fire Emblem, they added it in.
Fire Emblem, they had it. Mario plus Rabbids, you could walk around the overworld and talk to people and do little quests. So, yeah. I don't know. It's still a very, very fun tactical strategy game.
Yeah.
We'll see. It becomes more pace. Cool.
Well, we're going to leave it there for another week on Filthy Casuals. Filthycasuals.com.au for the links to all the stuff that we have going on. We've got the Patreon. Get on there. Get a... bonus show every week.
That's right. Talking TV and movies tomorrow.
Yep.
I revisited a classic from the man who directed The Killer.
Okay.
And I also watched the second episode of The Curse.
Me too.
Ooh, mama.
We've also got the YouTube channel. Got our videos and stuff going up. Through Persona...
Revelations colon Persona?
The first Persona game.
Yep. Yes.
We just had a quick look at the first little bit of it.
Yeah.
Tommy's internet wasn't working properly, so you had a spotty look at parts of it.
I did not, because I was playing the game, I did not realize how often you were frozen.
Yeah.
I was only ever looking at myself on the screen. So, I was seeing you freeze me like, oh well. Great living in a...
It was weird because you guys would freeze a lot, but then the like stream of the game would keep going.
I guess,
and just realizing I was like super lagging behind, so I'm like, well, I can't really get in the mix too much here.
But it's a fascinating game, I thought.
Yeah.
For when it came out and what it's attempting and achieving. Go watch us play the first 40 odd minutes of that.
Yeah, just a little dip your toe in.
Yeah.
It's fun to have a little dip of a toe into things that we might want to look at.
Yeah. Anyway,
Have a look at the YouTube channel, patreon.com/filthycasualspod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can get the bonus podcasts there.
Oh, yeah. I put a call out for reviews on the two games we talked about today.
Oh yeah,
not a lot of interest.
It's too big of a year. People are too tapped out on everything else to bother with Super Mario RPG.
Thank you for. I think we had two comments.
Yes.
So I'll go and reply to them.
They were both
this.
About Persona.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to leave it there, guys. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every edition of Filthy Casuals,
thanks for listening, Gordon. In the podcast chamber. People, Half-Life. It's from Half-Life.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.